Hi, this is Sally and welcome to Reclaiming Pride, LGBT plus survivors of narcissistic abuse. Before we start, there is a trigger warning. The episodes of this podcast may at times refer to domestic violence, emotional, financial, and sexual abuse. To begin, as always, I'd like us to start with a one-word feelings check. And if you've not joined us before, what that means is, what is one word for how you are feeling right now? Try and keep it to yourself. So, in other words, not how people around you are feeling or how the people you're caring about are feeling, but how are you feeling right now in one word? Today, we embark on an exploration of the different dynamics to look out for to see whether you are in or have been in a narcissistic relationship. If you've listened to previous episodes of this podcast, you'll notice that the various dynamics I explore here follow the cycle of narcissistic abuse. So, for example, it goes from the beginning with idealization through the devaluation and possible hoovering phases. If you've ever felt the weight of manipulation and the draining energy of these toxic relationships, you're in the right place. So let's take a deep breath and get right into it. It might help you to imagine this episode as your guide through the labyrinth of narcissistic behavior, providing validation for what you've experienced and, hopefully, offering a sense of closure. So let's start this journey by understanding the initial assessment phase of the narcissistic individual. Picture this. You enter the orbit of the narcissist, and the first thing they do is evaluate whether you are deserving of recognition and affection. It's a subtle dance where you either enhance or threaten their perception of themselves. Remember, it's always about them. If you fall into neither category, you might find yourself dismissed or simply not acknowledged at all by the narcissist. Perhaps you've witnessed this in action. Your NPD ex-friend or family member or ex doing it to others in your company. The dismissive attitude, the projection of disdain, and the subtle attempts to control your associations with other people. Does that sound familiar to you? It certainly does to me. This was a very go-to behavior for my ex. Now, if the narcissistic individual deems you worthy of pursuit, the next phase begins. The art of drawing you into their arena begins. Brace yourself for a whirlwind of inspiration that might leave you dazzled and disoriented, causing you to lose sight of your own agenda, priorities, and ultimately your own life. These individuals are compulsively driven to come out on top in relationships. They employ a range of strategies that you may have already experienced. Strategies like idealization, victim and guilt tripping, intimidation tactics, distraction maneuvers, devaluation, repetitive put-downs, projection, and finally, emotional vampirism and hostage taking. Now, pause for a moment. Do any of those sound eerily familiar to you? If you're nodding your head, you're not alone. So let's start to dive deeper into the first tactic that I named, idealization and false admiration. The narcissist, in the beginning stages, won't immediately wage war on you. Instead, they'll absorb you and your abilities, creating an intricate web of charm, charisma, humor, wit, and drama. Have you ever been captivated by someone's charisma, only to realize later that it was a facade carefully crafted to ensnare you? The power of a narcissist lies in their ability to make you unconsciously agree that they are truly extraordinary. Before you know it, you're following their lead, enjoying their charisma, and perhaps even intimidated by their efforts at persuasion, power, and authority over you. It is, as we all know, a slippery slope. You might not even realize that you're losing track of your own life and agenda and deferring so much to the narcissist. Friends may start noticing your absence, questioning if everything's okay, as you've become increasingly entangled in the glow of this narcissistic person. I remember this happening. I remember this happening very clearly, and I have deep regret over those times. At this point, you might find yourself intoxicated by the narcissist's treatment. The idealization becomes a distraction, causing you to forsake your desires, lose your identity, and compromise your ability for self-care. Perhaps you've even been down this road, making financial sacrifices that put you in debt, or being at their beck and call. I ended up in financial difficulty and was unable to pay my rent pretty soon into the beginning of the relationship, and yet this person was becoming my world. The temptation of infatuation tends to induce a feeling of being larger than life, and you find yourself basking in the glow of the narcissist. You might even develop an overinflated sense of self for yourself as the narcissist projects their idealized image onto you at the beginning, during the idealization stage. Meanwhile, behind the scenes of this seemingly amazing experience, there are conditional expectations at play. As they shower you with attention, opportunities, and financial enhancements, they induce you into a sense of obligation and disproportionate loyalty. Setting limits on their unrealistic expectations becomes challenging for you, especially as the relationship grows more intimate. The more you invest emotionally, the harder it becomes to resist the NPD person's increasing dissatisfaction with you. As you risk significant emotional investment, you may find yourself bewildered, asking, what happened to the love we shared? How can someone claim to love me so deeply and yet be so utterly cruel at the drop of a hat? It's here that we move into intimidation tactics. This is the realm where the narcissist's capacity to intimidate becomes a fine art. Intimidation is not just an overt power play. It's a subtle dance of authority, aloofness, scrutiny, and an indifferent attitude. You might find yourself constantly trying to work out if this person truly loves you, as their behavior is never clear, and deep down, you know that true love doesn't manifest itself in this way at all. The narcissist may respond only to your admiration and support, leading you to invest more energy in those behaviors. At other times, you might have no idea where you stand, feeling uneasy with no real feedback or response from the narcissist. This is often the pattern of a covert narcissist, drawing you into their perception of their exceptionalism through an aloof and indifferent manner towards you. The shifting dynamic of pursuer and pursued is already in progress here, and it will intensify until the relationship is on the narcissist's terms alone completely. The intimidation tactics may be more overt, with continual references to differences in power, professional stature, education, money, those kinds of things. In response, you may feel obligated to keep a low profile, giving up opportunities for yourself to express your own opinions and needs. If you confront the grandiose competitive display head on, you'll discover the narcissist's readiness to define the lines of competition and invite devaluing behaviors through covert manipulation. Now let's dive into what happens next, the victim guilt trip behavior. This is another primary dynamic of power. Often, you'll be drawn into the narcissist's world through their display of unique suffering. Right at the start of our relationship, I remember spending almost 6 hours listening to my ex's victim story in a beautiful setting. It was a one-sided exposition, and I wasn't once asked to share. Neither was I given the opportunity. I was then criticized later on for not sharing enough about myself. After having you sit for literally hours listening to their life story and their victimhood, narcissists may simultaneously communicate how special you are with your exceptional abilities to listen, provide hope, give assistance, and support them. It's very much about that at the beginning of the relationship. However, over time, you realize their circumstances are forever dramatically urgent. They are always in crisis in some way, shape, or form, and you start to become like an irreplaceable support animal, literally an animal. Attempts to step back from this support role intensify martyr behaviors, with somber and hurt expressions of reproach from the narcissist. Your own sensitivity or unwillingness to hurt their feelings plays a role in keeping you hostage to their manipulations. The narcissist may have identified your vulnerabilities earlier on, knowing how to exploit them. As I'd shared in an earlier episode, I had actually been labeled guilt girl by my ex before we'd even spoken, thus setting the stage for manipulation. So moving forward, let's explore the distraction dynamic and the narcissist's continuous knack for creating a sense of distraction. As you progress further into the relationship, you'll witness the narcissist's ability to continually shift focus away from you and those around you and center it back onto their own agenda. It's constant. The power to distract may take various forms. It could be humor, topic shifting, sarcasm, that's a common one, making catastrophic predictions, maybe subtly pitting one person against another, or creating an atmosphere of distrust, or asserting a last-minute change of mind, thus causing chaos. Accusations that you are unspontaneous and boring may follow as a result of you pausing for a moment to try and work out what on earth is going on. The more chaos and confusion in any situation, the more the narcissist can assert their goals and seize power. The pattern becomes clear. Blurring boundaries as the narcissist distracts you from your own intentions in the relationship. Distraction dynamics often serve as a defensive reaction to avoid addressing issues the narcissist would rather ignore. Defocusing the subject by bringing up a counter-complaint or counter-argument is a very common form of distraction in narcissistic personality disorder. It's crucial to recognize and navigate these distractions to maintain your boundaries if you're still in a relationship with this person or if you can't avoid being in a relationship with this person. Then we move into the devaluation stage. A shift in the dynamics of power. The narcissist's power is now exerted through both subtle and overt put-downs. Criticism becomes constant, and defending yourself only reinforces the cycle and makes the narcissist verbally and physically abusive at times. The narcissist generally has an endless repertoire for delivering criticism to other people. By this point in the relationship, defending yourself has become a knee-jerk reaction. They might even criticize you for being defensive, creating a pattern that undermines your self-esteem. I remember being accused of being defensive nearly all of the time. This coming from the person who did not see that they were the actual reason for said defensiveness and fear. Countering the criticism with an explanation or rebuttal encourages the narcissist's desire to pursue their critique of you even more. It becomes their way or the highway. So literally, it's like being in a peat bog and struggling to get out, that only makes you sink even more. As the devaluation behaviors unfold, projection behaviors become more apparent. At the heart of the devaluation lies the projection defense. Negative projections of the narcissist stem from their unconscious self-hatred and rage, leading them to view others as inherently flawed and inadequate, which, ironically, is exactly what they are themselves. The narcissist feels compelled to tell you all about your apparent flaws, verbally attacking you for various reasons. If the projection goes full circle, you walk away feeling flattened, miserable, and confused, and your self-esteem is dangerously close to zero. The NPD person has then successfully projected onto you their own experience of self, causing you to blame yourself and feel lost in a labyrinth of lies. The narcissist's ability to project the illusion that their logic is airtight and their analysis is well-reasoned can be extremely powerful. As you defend yourself against a barrage of attacks, you may lose control and say things that you later regret, intensifying your fear that you are the problem. I remember this also. My ex was extremely verbally astute and intelligent. This illusion of objectivity and sound-mindedness was very strong with her. The mental capacity of an NPD individual is often formidable, don't be fooled, and their ability to appear composed and in control reinforces the appearance of their superiority. You might find yourself lost in the labyrinth of their own making, with the narcissist enjoying every minute of it. Finally, we arrive at emotional vampirism and hostage taking. At this point, the relationship with your ex-friend, family member, partner has deteriorated to such a point that even minor issues become escalated arguments almost immediately. You're walking on eggshells to such a point that you really don't even communicate anymore. Power plays involving threats are a regular occurrence at this stage. Your fear of the NPD individual's rage, along with your fear of their disregard or rejection, might paralyze you from acting on your own behalf or especially seeking help. Your self-esteem is at rock bottom, and you're likely questioning your own mental health at this time. The increasing starvation for some sign of love or even crumbs of affection and acceptance from the NPD person contributes to your inability to act and make decisions that benefit you. This phase resembles the phenomenon of burnout in a job and drains your energy, rendering you unable to act and make even positive changes. The path of least resistance becomes treading water, hoping for improvement. False hope is also explored in episode 12 of this podcast, in which we look at how false hope keeps the situationship with the narcissist alive. And it's at this stage that false hope is at its ultimate power. Reluctant to risk rocking the boat, you might cling to the belief that love and time will bring about change. This, however, is completely wishful thinking, I'm sorry. So that was a lot. In this episode, so far, we've explored the intricate behaviors and dynamics of narcissistic or toxic relationships, from the idealization phase to victim guilt-tripping behaviors, intimidation, distraction, devaluation, repetitive criticism, emotional vampirism, and hostage-taking. These are all the stages you may have encountered or may even, unfortunately, be encountering now. The hard truth, in conclusion, is that the more serious dynamics of power and manipulation evolve as you enter the inner chamber with the narcissistic person, especially in intimate relationships or parent-child relationships. If you find yourself in a relationship with an NPD person and experiencing these behaviors, you are likely struggling to sustain self-esteem and confidence. They have a way of stealing it all from you and leaving you feeling like a shell of your former self. I remember not even liking my own company because her literal tapes about me would play inside my head constantly. It's total brainwashing. You may feel pervasive self-doubt about your own perceptions of reality, eventually becoming subject to the emotional hostage-taking dynamic. You're unable to leave, get paralyzed from acting on your own behalf if you stay. Depending on the severity of your circumstances, seeking some form of outside assistance or professional help becomes crucial for breaking free, and yet you can be very fearful of doing that. I remember that too, just very afraid, because if the person finds out that that's what you're doing, or if they know you're having counseling, they're likely to actually imagine that you're doing it because of all of the terrible issues that you have. So then if they find out that you're doing that to actually talk about the problems you have with the narcissistic person, it will cause incredible amount of trouble, and that fear can paralyze you. Remember, you are not alone in this journey. Understanding these dynamics is the first step towards reclaiming your power, reclaiming your pride. If you found this episode helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel for this podcast or join in the conversation on Instagram or Facebook. Please feel free to share your thoughts in the comments here. Now, let's take a break. And after that, I'll be back with a listener question. I'll see you in a moment. Welcome back. And this week's listener question comes from a listener who would like to know the following. Hi, Sally. What was your biggest fear about leaving your abusive ex? We always have people saying the classic, why didn't you just leave? Because we all know it doesn't really work that way. So what was the biggest hurdle for you in leaving? So thank you for that question. It runs very deep. And honestly, I think I'm still trying to answer it all for myself. I do know for absolutely sure, though, that the cardinal issue that I had in either kind of emotionally distancing myself in the relationship or physically separating myself in that relationship, for example, sleeping in a separate room, putting my work desk in the bedroom, etc. So to kind of close the door, and that's really where I lived, in one room in my own house. So the cardinal problem for me leaving that relationship, either emotionally or physically or both, was fear. Fear was the trait that stopped me for many years from leaving. As we've seen in many of the episodes of the podcast, the narcissist systematically and insidiously deconstructs you. They undermine your every waking moment. They make you second guess yourself. They turn you into a pariah, even in your own mind. What you have to understand is that these people are often highly intelligent. Now, don't get it twisted, though. I don't mean that they're emotionally intelligent, because their emotional intelligence is less than zero. No, I mean their IQ. Ironically, these people are actually usually very intelligent in terms of IQ. They're good with words. They can be charming. In other words, they can be completely convincing. And this is one of the ways in which, I guess, nature has made it so that they can protect themselves and get a mate. Over time, my ex convinced me that I was, in fact, this sniveling, weak, lying, pathetic imposter that she projected onto me. I see it very clearly now, even though when you're in it, it's so disturbing and toxic that you're literally brainwashed. It's like being in a cult. There's always a part of you that knows that none of this is true, but it's so hard to explain that the manipulation that they've subjected you to trumps your own sense of logic, your own sense of self, and your own sense of who you know you are. Many of us who've been in these kinds of toxic relationships live through an extremely hard childhood. After that, we had to claw back our sense of self over many years. So once you meet one of these people and get into a relationship with them, they will literally destroy that brick by brick. They will also mock the self that you've managed to claw back from your childhood and claim it to be pathetic and illusory. Because that's what they are. They're pathetic and illusory. But you only see that afterwards. You only fully see that afterwards, never when you're in it. You are afraid of their rage. You're afraid of ramifications and retaliation. You're afraid of violence. You're afraid they'll show up at your job and embarrass you even further. You have to remember, this is the worst kind of unstable person. They appear completely together and even highly respected on the outside, but they're actually very dangerous. There's so much you're afraid of in these relationships, I can't even list it all. So I think, yeah, my cardinal problem with getting out of the relationship was the overwhelming sense of fear. It's very much actually like being in a cult, like I mentioned before. And actually, I will have an episode on that in the future, as well as the escaping from a narcissistic relationship has an enormous amount of parallels to escaping from a cult. Yeah, and that, and also you mentioned in your question, anyone who says, why didn't you just leave? Really needs to educate themselves more on what it actually means to be in an abusive relationship and the controlling, brainwashing dynamics at play. That's the only way that anybody will understand that just leaving is mostly not an option. When the relationship did eventually end, I literally had got to the point where I was so stripped down emotionally that it was almost just like going limp in a physical fight in the hopes that the person beating you will stop because they think you're unconscious. It was like that. It's at that point, which I suppose some people call rock bottom, that it really ended for me. That's when it really ended for me. I refused to engage with her anymore. And within 2 months, the relationship was over. I was no longer her narcissistic supply. She would need to go out and find it elsewhere. Honestly, I really hope she hasn't. So listener, I hope that helped to maybe scratch the surface of answering this question that you had. And I chose this one particularly because I think that many of us are often asked the question, why didn't you leave? What's wrong with you? These questions are not only ignorant, to be honest, but they are also re-traumatizing. Indeed, questions like this actually often echo the abuser that we escape from. It has the same tone of what's wrong with you? It's all in your mind. Why didn't you do XYZ? So thank you, listener, for shining a light in this area also and for asking this question. Please note, this podcast is not intended to replace professional therapy or counseling. It serves as a supplementary resource for support and encouragement. Listeners, you are encouraged to seek professional help if needed. I did, and it works for me every day. Stay tuned, and I look forward to healing with you again next time. Bye-bye.